Hey, welcome to Popcorn Talk. I talk movies. Today, I'm going to talk with Daniel Bacon, who's in the upcoming film BFG. We're going to give you the inside scoop about that and other interesting facts about this multi-talented actor. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's I Talk Movies.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm your host, Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E. And today I'm joined by Daniel Bacon. Why don't you say hello, Daniel?
Hello, everyone.
And where can people find you online?
They can find me at the Daniel Bacon on Twitter. And if you want to follow and check it out on Instagram, I'm Daniel J. Bacon.
Nice. I don't know why, but these chairs, I feel so like... They're swivel chairs. I just want to wiggle.
Good times.
Yay.
Well, that you know, cool in the gang.
And the music just gets you going. We'll you're like, you going. Oh, I got to go. Okay. Anyway, in all seriousness.
No. Yes. Serious talk.
Yeah. No, of course. Absolutely. So real quick for viewers, if they don't know really anything about you, you're originally born in England, but then moved to Canada.
Yes.
So then you're not technically a British actor by definition.
By definition, I'm not a British actor.
Yeah. I think the accent's not quite right.
Not quite right.
No. And then you're in this kind of big movie, the name Big's in the title, sort of.
The indie film by the up-and-coming indie director.
Yeah.
Yeah, BFG, which is big.
A little bit, just a little bit. Because, you know, it has Steven Spielberg attached.
That guy and Mark Rylance, he might have won an Oscar recently, you know,
people.
Yeah, some folks.
All right, so why don't you tell me about your character and what is your role in the film?
So the film is a direct adaptation of the Roald Dahl book, the BFG. And in the BFG, the title character, the titular character, is the big friendly giant. And he ends up taking an orphan in the middle of the night from an orphanage, Sophie. Mm-hmm. And he takes her back to giant country. And when he gets back to giant country, we find that there's 9 not-so-friendly giants. And so I play one of the not-so-friendly giants in the film.
Wait, so that must mean you have to act, because you seem so friendly right now.
Oh.
So you're even.
Very talented. No.
Yeah.
we're a posse, if you will, of these not-so-friendly giants. And, you know, there's a hierarchy and a brotherhood, if you will, amongst us. And the funny part is that our scope is much larger. So the BFG is the runt of the giant clan, and he's about 24 feet tall.
Only.
And we range the giants from 40 to 60 feet tall.
Wow.
So, yeah. So that was interesting, you know, having to film the different perspectives and the different size ratios.
Yes.
So that presented some interesting, unique challenges.
For sure. And your character's name is Bone Crusher,
right? I'm Bone Crusher.
Did you do a certain kind of voice?
Well, we had to audition. So the audition was an interesting part in that we were given a short little scene that we were told wouldn't be our characters. It was one of the giant characters.
Okay.
And then we had to prepare that. And then they wanted us to prepare our own character, our own giant. So we had to create, a minute to 2 minute long little scene of a character.
Is that going to be on like DVD bonus footages?
I don't know.
That'd be so cool.
But that was really cool. So it was really neat to have an opportunity to be creative. And I actually took my dog for a walk up a creek that was near us and came up with the idea of what I wanted to do. And then went in 2 days later and put it on audition. You know, we did them on tape in Vancouver.
Nice.
And about a month later, I got a call that I was on a short list. And they saw, over 100 and something people just for the Giants in Vancouver, as well as Toronto, as well as other areas. And to make a short list was in itself exciting.
Sure.
And then a few days after that, I got another call that I had made a shorter list.
Mm.
And then about 5 days after that, I got the call that I had been approved as one of the Giants.
That's exciting. Did you name your Giant that you made for your own story?
No. Oh, did I?
I mean, my for own, your own thing.
My
own
audition?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't name him, but he was definitely... I had 2 different characters. I had one for scripted audition and then one for the non-scripted audition.
Uh-huh.
And the scripted audition, I actually based him on Scar from The Lion King.
Yeah.
So on Jeremy Irons' character. So he was based on that. And then my other giant was based on Ray Winstone. The British actor. So I had very distinct characters in mind, and I had a different animal for each one. So
that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I had a bit of animal work that I incorporated, and one was a vulture, a buzzard, and the other one was an orangutan.
Those are very different movement and posture and such.
And that's part of it. I think, you know, because we talked amongst the Canadian actors that were cast as giants. We weren't really sure because we never had a callback, which was we were all very surprised by.
Okay.
So we were like, how did we stand out? No one really came and told us, you did this, and this is why we cast you. So, but we found when we talked to each other is that we all kind of had fun. We all just went for it, you know, and embraced that four-year-old in us and just had a blast with it. I walked out of my audition like I was on cloud nine because I just exactly went in there and was really committed to what I had hoped to do and played in the room. And so, yeah, that was really fun.
Nice. There you go, guys. Actor advice. Have fun and channel your inner four-year-old if you're doing giant work. Now, when you did the giant work on the film BFG, did you incorporate that animal movement again, or did you have coaching?
We had coaching. So we had a movement choreographer, Terry Notary, who had worked on Planet of the Apes, and he did some work on The Hobbit and with Tintin. So we got together with him, and so we'd have group rehearsals, and then we'd have individual rehearsals. And one of the nice things that Terry did was he took a little bit of how we moved individually as ourselves and then use that as a bit of a inspiration, if you will, to then start to build. So I don't know if I had as much directly of what I had created in my initial audition, but there's definitely sprinkled in with some of the things that we put together with Terry and some of the things once all of us got together and finding that dynamic of how each of the giants interacted with each other. So we put all that together. So,
and then as the giants, was there any how much interaction did you have with the other giants while filming?
Pretty much, we were the giant. They just say, "Bring in the giants," and so we were a posse, and it was nice because there was a real camaraderie. I mean, they did all of the guys that played the giants were just really good people, that there wasn't a lot of challenge to just really find a cohesive element to interact with each other. And they had a little bit of story with the screenwriter and with Steven, you know, of these guys. You know, these guys are siblings, and you know, obviously Jermaine Clement's character, Flesh Lump Eater, is the leader, and then Bill Hader's character, the Blood Bottler, is like his right hand man. So there was like amongst the rest of us is like, well, I want to be the right hand man. So that we had like a little bit of a, you know, a jockeying for position, if you will, to move up the chain of command. So so when we weren't filming, you know, we would get together outside or just hang it with somebody's trailer and you know, get to know each other. And it, I think it really came through in how, you know, that cohesive unit that we had and the brotherhood really. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds kind of really fun. Of like, also, how was it playing like the villain? Because often people say it's a lot of fun to play a villain. I mean, you're not necessarily like the villain,
right?
But if the hero giant is the one who's not a man eater and you're part of the man eating group, you're technically, by definition,
the bad guys.
So,
You know, I don't know if I ever felt. I mean, if you think about it, we eat people, including children, which is not, you know, the most honorable thing that you could tell mom that's what your career was. Mom, I've got a new job. I'm eating children. But I don't know if we ever felt evil. I mean, we definitely, as a group, came up with a justification for why we behaved the way we did. So I don't know if I ever felt like I'm really mean. And being that the BFG is the runt, and you know, he doesn't eat human beings. He eats vegetarables, and so it was. I just used my own personal. How do you put it? Vegans, you know, I'm like, I'm happy you're a vegan, but I'm not a vegan. So, so I was able to channel that element, and put that into my giant. So.
Well, no villain ever thinks they're the villain though, too.
Exactly. Right?
Yes. And, you mentioned the different perspectives on the giants. Now you all are varying heights as actors, but did they incorporate that with how tall your giant was, or did they have different people in different kind of shoes or something?
No, but I mean, the one thing they did, I mean, it's so detail oriented. Like everything about the film was detail oriented, but then also in the making of the film was very detail oriented. So, you know, from every little article of clothing that our individual giants wore to the trinkets, like we'd have, some of us had bracelets, some of us had, you know, charms, if you will, of different missions, if you will, that we'd been on, or different mm-hmm. hunting nights that we'd had, and we collected these little amulets, if you will. So that really helped to distinguish and incorporate that into our giants. And so so that was there. And as we worked together, and as the team from Weta and some of the other departments saw us, they started to then integrate that into our giant. So I definitely, you know, the day one look of my giant to near the end had definitely changed based on mm-hmm. what we look like.
And then when you had to shoot the different perspectives of height, because people have different heights, I think I meant more like that of if you're standing next to one of the actors, did they right. incorporate it of like, well, then you're the 60-foot
no,
tall one?
They had that predetermined for the most part okay. beforehand. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, one of the giants is he's younger than the rest of us, so he's almost like a boy.
Okay.
And so he is much shorter, but in real life, the actor, Michael Abernthwaite, is mm-hmm. not shorter than I am. He's taller okay. than I am. So that changed a little bit. One of the interesting things with the different perspectives is that they would have to shoot most of the scenes three times. So you have
okay.
to shoot it in
yeah.
Sophie's world. And
oh, wow.
so they had
okay.
a separate stage, if you will, for having large items so that Sophie could walk around. So that Ruby, who plays Sophie, could walk around on that set. And then they had the set that is Mark, who plays the BFG, mm-hmm. Mark Rylance. They had his size world, and we'd often enter into that, but it would be very small for us. And he would often, you know, have to play it on his knees or on a you know, at a different height.
Yeah.
And then we had a set where it was Mark's perspective, but in our land, so everything was really big to him. So that was interesting to see that process play out.
Was it kind of like you felt like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
A little
or something?
Bit. It You're is like, a little bit like
so
that.
Big.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
That'd
so,
be fun.
Yeah.
And then, so it obviously deals with CGI. How much of it was practical? And you want to talk about the practical versus CGI, and like what elements they used and how they accomplished some of those giantness.
So, the giant, pretty much the entire giant world is mm-hmm. was CGI. So,
okay.
we were in a big, empty volume.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had the lovely gray suits with the little dots on them and then the head cams.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of it we relied on you know, Steven explaining to us, you know, what was going to be here and what was going to be there. And in a couple of sequences, they would have taped out on the floor, there's going to be like a table here, or there'll be
yeah.
a bookshelf here. And so, as we walked around, we then had a perspective of what would be where. So for eye lines and where to move and where not to step through, we had that. So that was really interesting. And then some of like the England, when they go to England, they had some practical sets for that.
Mm-hmm.
They had a three city block of England that they constructed and so forth. So so they had that. But I mean, for the most part, it is in that magical world. One of my favorite parts in the book, and then what played out in the movie, is the dream. Country that they go to, where they go to capture dreams, and it looks magnificent in the film, and
mm-hmm.
and so they had a portion of that built, and so that and that would look, it just looks so great. I mean, again, the detail that they put into this was really, really something.
Yeah, and you just mentioned the book, and I forgot to ask. So, did you read the book? Had you read it prior to this at all, or did this prompt you to read it?
It prompted me. I had read Roald Dahl books. I've
okay.
always liked Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and mm-hmm. Fantastic Mr. Fox
yeah.
is another one I really enjoy. But I'd never read the BFG, so I didn't think it was just a gun from Doom, as a lot of people online have alluded to. But I went out and got it. So I got it the weekend of I got my audition call on a Friday, and my audition was on the Monday. So I read it over the weekend.
Zoomed through it.
And I also watched the animated film that they did. I think it was 89.
Oh,
they did
okay.
an animated film
Good
of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so as part of my homework, I went
sure.
and checked those two things out. It's a great read. It's
mm-hmm.
very interesting. I don't think I've ever read a book like it, you know.
Mm.
And so it was a really interesting to say, okay, so this is what the book is, and now let's see how they bring this to life. And you know, Mark Rylance, he does a great job. I mean, there's
mm-hmm.
giant speak that
mm-hmm.
he does, and that's directly from the book. I mean, it was great to work with Melissa Mathison, who unfortunately, you know, passed away. But you know, she did such a great job of capturing the magic of what he had written in the book. And so, and she was very collaborative. We got to meet her, and she was on set with us and, you know, sort of incorporated once she met all of us. You know, if she needed to make any adjustments,
okay.
she would make adjustments
yeah.
based on meeting us. So that was really cool.
Very cool. Now, after reading the book and now acting in it and seeing it, how well do you feel they follow, or is it kind of like the things they changed work, or what do you think?
I think the things they changed absolutely work.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely work. So, you know, huge fans of the book will notice some variation from the actual book, but I think the spirit and the relationship between Sophie mm-hmm. and the BFG is really what, you know, is the main focus. And I think that comes through really, really nicely in the film.
Aw. And then back to the suits, actually. What was it like wearing the gray suit with the dots?
Oh, gosh. It you know, I've embraced my dad bod that I'm slowly morphing into. I'll never forget, you know, you put these suits on and you have little caps even that they have the little dots on. Mm-hmm. And you walk on and say, hi, guys. Everyone's there. And then the first day, Bill Hader, he came a few days later. And he walked in Bill Hader fashion. And he's like, hey, guys. Do you feel as silly in this gray suit as I do? And so, you know, having him come in and crack that,
we break the ice of it.
We're all in the suit together. So
it's just spandex, pretty much, right?
Oh, and then the measurements alone, when they measured
tight. It has to be because it has to be your body. It
has to be.
Do you all wear undergarments and such underneath?
We did.
Okay.
Yes.
Just thinking of how tight it has to be in such.
We actually had the Under Armour sort of like the
oh,
like, we
yeah.
had that.
Well, because like sweat yeah. and okay.
Full yeah. leggings and full mm-hmm. arms. Yeah. So we had those underneath.
Did you guys take any fun photos behind the scenes like that?
No, because we weren't allowed to.
This is true. Good point.
I may have. Somewhere, but no.
Once it's on DVD and
you know,
everything.
It's one of those things, though. You know, you're like, this is big. This is Disney. This is Spielberg. You didn't want to really ever try and risk that. It wasn't worth it to risk that.
Did they take? They must have taken photos, though. So
yeah, I'm sure. Okay, when it comes out, they'll be behind the scenes. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's always fun to see the people in the suits and do it, and like,
yeah,
how much imagination you need to really put into it to. Feel that world.
Well, people will see it's literally a big open volume. They call it a volume. So once you have your dots and everything on, you go into a little area where you get entered into the system. So you have to do all these different movements, and you know, and the computer registers all your movements, and then you go into the main playing volume, and they all of a sudden your character comes up. She's like having an avatar.
I was just gonna say it's like a video game.
It's like
your
video
character
game.
Has appeared.
And so they'd have a big screen TV, and you could sit there and watch yourself move. It was amazing. You do this with your finger, and mm-hmm. your character would do that with
his
finger.
So how long did you stand there doing that?
We started in the end of March and went till close to the end of May. So a lot of days in gray suits, going through the same motions every day. You know, it was got to know all the different people involved at all the different stations that we had to go to. Nice. I mean, it was a well-oiled machine from into makeup, getting the dots put on your face, getting into your spandex, going into the studio, going through the volume. It was just boom, 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 boom.
How long did it take to do dots on the face?
The first few days, it probably about an hour, and a bit, and then by the end, they got really smart. They had these little plastic overlays that they could put over our face that had all the dots, and so they had a really good team of makeup artists that would got really good at doing it by the end of the shoot.
Nice. And then what was it like working with Steven Spielberg?
I don't even. I mean, you know, you plug away, you toil away as an actor, and you know, you have some fun opportunities. I've had a chance to meet some really nice, well-known actors and work with them, and great. I don't know if I ever envisioned that I would have at this stage the chance to work with Steven Spielberg. And so, even when I told my wife, I'm like, I got the part. And she's like, so do you get to meet him? And I'm like, well, he is the director, so
I hope so.
And so that was definitely. I wanted to, part of my journey was I wanted to keep my head in the clouds and stay in that place, but keep my feet on the ground.
It's a good way to look at
it. And so, you know, I didn't want to be weird about it. I wanted to be present and be able to take all of it in. And he was so gracious. I mean, we had a day where we were presented to him, and he came over to meet us for the first time and introduced himself. And he was he's just such a likable person. Like, you just really get that energy from him when you walk in. You know, I mean, he's arguably one of the biggest directors of all time. And, you know, but you didn't ever get the sense that he had to prove anything to anybody. You know, he was very much about, this is going to be a lot of fun. You know, let's go in there and let's make a really great movie. And and including his whole production team, Frank Marshall, and, it was the same way. You know, they were all just really down to earth, and it really made it about the work and about the process of making a really good story. And so when that's at the top, it's really easy to just fall in line, you know, and to take your cues from them. So that was really cool.
Were there any crazy or fun stories you can say?
I think this one's allowable. Stephen had recently come off of Bridge of Spies. Mm-hmm. And so one of the days he'd go, oh, guys, come here. Let's do a funny photo. Hanks, he's blown up my phone, you know. So he would do these little selfies with us and send them to Tom Hanks, which was kind of fun. And then we had to do a line at one point where we were the Jets from West Side Story, where we had to do the whole snapping the fingers as our characters walking in. So that was pretty fun.
That's funny. Yeah, could you imagine? Do you think like 5 years ago you'd imagine yourself be like, I'm working with Steven Spielberg in a gray suit and it's going to be in this big movie?
Well, I've done voiceover, and I did a voiceover in a cartoon, mm-hmm. a Marvel cartoon. And I got the role, and it was, you know, one of the lead roles. It was really exciting. Mm-hmm. And my agent said, you know, be careful, you know, with voiceover, you know, you don't want to count your eggs before they hatch because sometimes you can get replaced. I'm like, got to make sure, you know, watch my P's and Q's. And then we went in and we recorded the first day, and we came back for the second day, and they'd replaced the main character after the first day. So I was like, holy cow, this is serious, right? They'll do that. And so I had a little bit of that. Like, I wanted to be professional. I wanted to enjoy the experience, but I wanted to be professional. So, you know, that's how I approached it.
Healthy balance. And what's it like going from voiceover work to suit work? Well, sort of suit. Gray suit.
You know what? It depends if you do a dubbing series or if you do prelay. And so prelay for animation is great because they are going to draw it off of what we do. So, you know, you can really get in there and add little details and breaths or pre-life, you know, little pops and whatnot. And it helped to get into the physicality of what your character was doing without making too much noise, of course. So I found that really transferable to this because, you know, again, it was prelay, essentially, when you're doing the motion capture and the performance capture. So every little detail that you could add in is only going to help them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The technology allows them to capture everything you do. So, you know, as long as they can sort through it, they can just pick and choose what works and what doesn't work. So even if it was from a different take, you know, they go, oh, we really liked what his face did in this take. So we're going to take that and put it in this take over here.
Oh, that's kind of crazy.
So, yeah.
Is that going to be weird? You'll be like, I don't think I did that then. Or, well, I mean, you already saw it. Did you have a moment where you're like, wait?
You know, there was probably about three or four of my own. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And then it was fun to watch the other giants because one of the giants in particular is the sequence that's in the trailer of the giant that steps on the cars. And I remember that very vividly. And so seeing it in the movie, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can picture Chris, who plays Gizzard Gulper. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I can picture him running by me. And that's exactly what it looked like. So it was really cool to see just how accurate and detailed the movements that we did actually translated into the film.
Was that kind of a little surreal as well?
It was incredibly surreal.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing
Deja vu almost, right?
I think I've been here before. The whole thing has been surreal. I mean, from the very get-go of getting the audition notice to showing up on set to finishing the film to attending a red carpet premiere on...
So what was that like? Cut you off there because I know that was an exciting video.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was, again, I'm a little bit... I'm entering a mature phase of my acting career without aging myself. It's making about the work, and these are enjoy. You know, it's very easy to get caught up in into that side of things and get ahead of yourself. But you know, my goal was to be present and to not be stiff and not try too hard, but really be aware of what was going on around me. And so I had my agent with me and my publicist, and you know, we were just a little team, and we just had fun, you know, and there was a lot of fans. They had with this group at D23, I think they're called, and they were Disney fans that were attending the premiere. Aww. And they were sitting, and it was so hot, and they were sitting there. So, you know, you talk to some media outlets, and I made sure to turn around and go and talk to them and say hi to them.
That's
and
nice of you.
You know, and talk to them a little bit, which was really cool. So that helped ground me, too, just to connect with people and say, you guys excited as I am? And, you know, and they were really great, so.
Yeah, and then so it had already had the premiere on Hollywood. Was it Hollywood Boulevard, right? Yeah. And then was there any other fun memories from that premiere? I mean, has that been like your first like big red carpet on Hollywood Boulevard?
That's my first big red carpet on Hollywood Boulevard. You know, and it was funny, you know, as an actor, you know, you have goals and objectives within your work, but then there's the little dream side, you know, like win an Oscar. But winning an Oscar was never really a dream of mine. I wanted to attend a red carpet premiere on Hollywood Boulevard. So I actually got to check an acting bucket list item off my list last night by attending that. I in my dream, I never actually envisioned it would be with Steven Spielberg in a Disney film. So those were bonuses. But it was as cool as I had hoped it would be. You know, it's just people are really great. You know, it's exciting and it's a fun event. So
you just
bask it in, you know?
Yeah, it probably was hard. And you had a suit, too. How hot was it? It was like, was it in the 90s or was 80?
I think it was in the 90s.
High 90s,
and I don't have hair, so I often wear hats in that situation. I didn't want to wear a hat, and so when
you
I started
lather
to,
on that sunblock,
I perspired, and then it starts to drip, and you're just this is fun.
Well, that's like the lights too. I've had it where I was talking to someone in like the sweat, and you almost want to like get tissue and be
tissue,
like, "Can I help
you?" Exactly.
Well, that's what your publicist and your agent are there for. Be like,
yes.
We need to.
You know, but again, you can't. It's so hard as actors. We're so critical. You know, I see the photos and I'm like, oh, I look fun. You know, I don't look like a full like chemo or anything. But one of my collars was askew. And I'm like, why didn't somebody? That's what I key in on. Not that I'm on a red carpet having fun. I'm like, oh, my collar is doing some weird thing.
Well, as an actor, you have your headshots and stuff. And you're like, why didn't you tell me I could fix it?
I could fix it.
I think you probably did fine.
Yeah. I hope so.
You survived.
Yeah. Not bad for, you know, I say I'm from Canada because I'm probably more Canadian than I am British. So I'm like, I'm not bad. I grew up in a small, like, town. Like, I'm, like, in a village.
Mm.
So, you know, it was kind of surreal to have grown up in this little tiny place called Cedar, B.C., you know, that didn't even have bus service when I was a kid that went out there. And to all of a sudden now be on Hollywood Boulevard with Steven Spielberg, it was like, wow.
You know. Have you had any reactions from any friends or family back home?
So, if I can share this with you, as you alluded to off the top, I'm not a good social media guy. I'm trying to be better with it. I find Instagram is probably my best avenue.
Yeah.
And I don't post a ton of work related things on Facebook.
Sometimes you can't.
And also that's for me and my peers. You know what I mean? I'm not a big at putting stuff unless I've got a show coming up that I want people to watch. But I did put something after last night because probably about 12 years ago I considered changing careers. You know, I'd been at it for about 8 years, and you know the journey wasn't going as I don't want to say quickly, but it just wasn't progressing as much as I'd hoped it would. And I was at a weird crossroads. And, you know, I actually worked for a week at another job. And it was that week at that job that made me realize that, no, I don't, this is what I got to do. Because I was never set out as a kid to be an actor. I got into it in my 20s. So I didn't have this lifelong dream when I was a kid. So, you know, I was reaching mid-30s. I'm like, I don't know. It's not really happening, you know. And I kind of want a home and to have some sort of stability. And so I thought about quitting. And then I didn't. And I said, you know what? Nope. This is what I want to do. This is what will make me happy inside. And, you know, all those other external things will come if I focus on me and I'm happy. So I wrote this little not rant, but a little piece blurb about it, and it blew up. Like, you know, I'm like, I think almost like half of my friends on Facebook either commented or put a like, and a lot of people was like, thank you for saying that and sharing that with us, because I said, if I hadn't quit, I wouldn't have had the opportunity that I had last night. Or if I had quit, I wouldn't have had that opportunity last night. So that was not a culmination, but it was a little moment that go, good thing you didn't quit, you know, because look at this great opportunity you've been presented with. And a lot of people just said, man, thank you so much, because it's hard. I mean, being an actor, you know, we're not a first responder. We're not in the military. We're not high school teachers. But it's a tough gig, because a lot of times it's not in your hands. You know, it doesn't matter if you have a degree. It doesn't matter what your resume says. You've continually got to interview. And sometimes it gets tough because you won't get the job for reasons that are out of your hands. So you feel very, like, helpless sometimes is to have that active element of getting the work. And so, you know, to put that out there, there's a lot of, I really needed to hear that today. And not just actors, like other creative people, like I really needed to hear that today. So it was really cool to put that out and get that response back from my friends and peers from the last 2 decades of my life.
You're officially inspirational.
Apparently. And my sister freaked out because apparently we were on Entertainment Tonight earlier tonight. So my sister sent me a message like freaking out, like, oh my gosh, you're on our team tonight.
That's
so that was cool.
That's cute. Yeah. Now, I think that's really good advice, so in general, for any actors. Of you're obviously an example of you just kind of have to stick with it because, you know, it's that last little bit that's when people quit, mm-hmm. and that's when things can change. And that can apply to anything in life.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think you have to be honest with yourself, too. You know, it depends what you want out of life. You know, if having some sense of security or some more stable career choice, then that's what makes you happy and what you need, then you have to follow that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think being honest with yourself, and I mean, that's one of the things I've appreciated about, again, not setting out to be an actor, but have fallen into it in my 20s. Mm-hmm. I love that self-reflective element and that exploration of what it means to be a human being. I mean, they don't go too deep on you, but
no,
that's what's
great.
Really cool about it. You know what I mean? That you learn not just about yourself, but what it means to be a human. And you tell stories about the human condition. And, you know, the more honest with yourself, the more honest you can do your portrayals and do the beautiful words that the screenwriter has written and bring those to life. And that whole little symbiotic relationship is really, really quite nice and fulfilling.
I think you summed that up rather nicely. But yeah, that sounds about right. Sounds good.
I figure if I throw in words like symbiotic, you know, make me sound somewhat smart.
I think you achieved it. I think you're good. Now, you kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, too, and people probably already know that it is a family film. What was it like working on a family film? Because you've done quite a lot of television,
mm-hmm.
A lot of different genres, supernatural, kind of fantasy, family, and crime drama. So mm-hmm. now you're in a family feature film. Was there anything kind of different that it was a family film or not necessarily?
I don't know if it's different. I think one of the things that you realize about how Steven Spielberg works is he's very in tune with the audience experience. So a lot of times, you know, in terms of how the scene would play out, you know, he can watch the film as he's directing it. Do you know what I mean? So I think, you know, with this one, you know, he really had that in mind of how he wanted the audience to see the story. And as an audience member himself, you know, how do we want to see this? And so I think it has a really nice underlying message in the bond between Sophie and the BFG, mm-hmm. and, you know, her helping to instill in him a sense of confidence and a sense of belief in himself. And I think that in seeing the film, that really comes through really, really nicely in the film.
Oh, that sounds good. I'm excited to see it. Because at first I was like, what is this movie about? And then you're like, oh, that actually looks really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's some elements from the book, I think, in terms of with the giants and, you know, mm-hmm. the fact that they eat human beings, you know, that, you know, that possibly was maybe just somewhat dimmed a little bit in favor of bringing out the relationship between the two of them. But it's also got some really, really funny stuff in it, so.
And then, do the giants have any sort of selection when they eat the humans or just whatever the ones they can catch?
You know what is funny is that they talk about, and it's in the book, is they go to different parts of the world. And
makes
so,
sense.
You know, Mexican, they call them beans, like human beans. And so Mexican beans taste very different than beans from Africa, which tastes very different from beans from Russia. Do you know what I mean? So, there's definitely different delicacies from different regions of the world.
Like, sure, I can go with that.
Yeah,
that makes
it
sense.
Plays, right?
Well, I meant when they pick off the human and eat it, do they have any sort of they don't really care who it is, right?
The slow ones.
It's whoever they get their hands on. It's like which one they broke away from the herd. And
some are chewier than the others, and some just slurp right down, so.
Was that fun making weird eating noises of eating the humans?
That whole process. I mean, that was part of the joy of acting in it is that, you know, you got to play every day. You went in and go, how about this, you know, and how about that? And we'd play off of each other and find little moments, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you know when you're making a film that maybe not all of these will make it into the final edit. But, it was nice to see that there was definitely, I think, each of us definitely had a moment, oh, great, that made it, you know? So we each definitely had one of those moments that made it into the film.
And kind of going off that, do you think you had to like, as an actor and in this particular film, you have to kind of let go of any restrictions you have on yourself and self-guessing? Because, you got to make the sound of eating a human, and was there any, you kind of had to just go for
with
it.
Just go with it. And, I mean, there's not really a precedent per se for
true.
It. So you're discovering it as you go.
Yeah.
And I mean, you got to leave your ego at the door. I was, my audition, I actually went not naked, but partially naked. I wore track pants, only track pants, and I scrunched them up to form almost a diaper, if you will.
Okay.
So if you can imagine if that audition tape surfaces somewhere, you'll see a very interesting, unique fashion choice that I made for my audition.
It'll be your life story video.
Exactly.
And they're like, remember back when his career and he did this film. Yeah. This is the footage.
I actually had a nice little precursor for this in that I did some off-camera work on the first night at the museum.
Oh, okay.
Where I got to be a couple different animals and so forth for eyelines for Ben Stiller when he came in. So I'd had a little bit of a precursor opportunity to play around with that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, it's another example of letting go and just kind of going with it because you're an animal.
Honestly, though, we have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Really, you know what I mean? Like, let's go for it. Let's play and... You continually, as an actor, trying to connect to that imaginative youth that we, you know, so many of us had. And some people, you know, they get into their teens and, oh, no, they let go of that. But, you know, we're fortunate as actors that, no, we need to bring that with us and embrace that and bring it out every day in our work.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, for sure, on this set with Steven Spielberg and this particular film, that you had an environment that you were free to do those
absolutely.
Kind of things.
Absolutely. And again, I mean, the nature of it, you know, because you're doing performance capture, there's not like the typical setup of a camera and having to hit a mark. I mean, you're just in this big space and even like in just sort of waiting for, you know, the next take, we could interact with each other. And because we were in the space, the computers would capture all that footage. So you could be goofing around. And sometimes, you know, Stephen would see guys goofing around. And go, oh, I like that. Let's put an element. Let's try that and bring that in. So it was very organic. And he was very open and, you know, collaborative to trying things out. And that's the thing. I mean, you're in a place where you can try everything. If you don't like it, you know, you don't use it. But we have that the ability now with the technology to just keep capturing footage.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's true. Of like, it's kind of unlimited in a way if you could just do so much more. And that's neat that they were able to incorporate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking of this one as kind of a genre and just touching a little bit about, like, you've done a lot of television of different kind of, yeah, there's genres. What has been your favorite to work on, television-wise?
Wow. You know, it's funny because, you know, in your journey, there's a lot of what I would call supportive roles that I've played. You know, I haven't had my own series or anything like that. But you know, you show up again in all these these shows that they shoot in Vancouver, supportive roles. A couple that I really enjoyed. I did a movie with Anne Heche a few years back called Toxic Skies, which was about chemtrails, and that was really cool because she was really, really great to work with and really open and very collaborative and you know, so that was really neat because I had to. You know, first time on film, I had to use some of my acting school, theater school, you know, stuff of getting teary and being really open and vulnerable and all those things. So that was a really enjoyable experience. And then I have a role on an upcoming film called Brain on Fire. And I worked with Chloe Grace Moretz, and you know, it was very wordy. Apparently, I look smart with the glasses on, so I often will get cast as doctors and medical professionals, and which comes with language that I never went to med school, so having to learn some of the medical jargon and making it seem like I know what I'm talking about is a nice challenge and very rewarding, I find.
Any quick tips for actors out there of getting that emotional state genuine? Getting it genuinely,
breath, breathing. You know, it's amazing, especially when you're into higher stress situations. How we don't breathe properly, you know.
Yeah.
So that to my voice teachers from theater school, they'll appreciate that I made that mention. but breathing
makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
I can tell a little secret if you like.
Sure. Please.
So one of the classes that I've taken over the years, we had these cards, and what you did is you put words and things on these cards and you would endow the card with whatever you put on it. And so you'd have one for your mom or you'd have one for for your wife or for a dog or for grandparents or things that you like, like ice cream or whatever. And so, you know, in your work, you would use these cards to help, you know, really connect to what that meant to you.
Mm.
And so I had my two cards. I had my trust and my breath card and I put them in my shoes every day I went to set to work. So when
really
putting my wardrobe on, I put those in my shoes.
And do you feel it helped then?
Absolutely. Because again, it reminded me that this, sure. I've worked hard to be here. You know, don't be apologetic. You know what I mean? Mm. Like you've worked hard to get to this point. So you know, don't walk around like you are somebody. But at the same time, don't shy away from it. You know, be present in the moment and really embrace it. So
I think that's excellent advice too. Because yeah, too many times people they're mm-hmm. and it's, no, you earned your spot to be there.
Absolutely,
they picked you for a reason. So.
And it is that balance you said earlier, mm-hmm. though, is because you want to not shy away and be apologetic, but at the same time, you don't want to walk around and be a jerk, which sometimes you see, and it's stressful. So I try not to judge those people because, you know, it's stressful. And so sometimes it's just that's how they're dealing with the stress is True. to try and do that. So
yeah. And then a little bit about you said it premiered on in abroad already a little bit?
Well, they had the original one in France at the festival there. And then we had the one on the red carpet last night. Mm-hmm. And then North America is next Friday, mm-hmm. July 1st. And then England, I think, is the 22nd. And so they're doing a London premiere on the 17th of July. So.
And you'll be going over there for that one?
I don't know if I'm going to go to that one. Okay. Some of the giants are. I'm not sure if I'm going to make it over there. I may. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes.
And do you have any other projects coming up? Because obviously you have BFG coming out. I can't talk. Blech. Very soon. Anything? Oh, well, you said the other one, the
Brain on Fire.
Thank you.
Well, they don't have a release date, but I think the fall, they're saying. And then I had a small role on a movie called Edge of 17, mm-hmm. Which is coming out in the fall. And I do a voice on Bob the Builder. So I'm Leo on Bob the Builder. One of the things that they do a lot of films in Vancouver is the Hallmark Channel. So I seem mm-hmm. to have fallen into a liking of them because I've done four this year. And one of the things about Hallmark movies, which is cool, is that there's a lot of 80s and 90s stars that are now coming back, and it's like a vehicle for them. So I've had the chance to work with Jenny Garth mm-hmm. and Danica Keller earlier this year, mm-hmm. and I fly home tomorrow, and I'll be working tomorrow afternoon with Debbie Gibson.
Oh, fun.
So that's kind of cool, you know.
You're keeping busy.
Yeah,
you know.
Keeping busy, so.
That
yeah.
must be exciting to have quite a few films lined up kind of rolling out.
Well, you know, unless you're on a first name basis with the planet as an actor, you still have to audition. You know, you're not getting.
You gotta work. Yeah.
You gotta work. But at the same time, you know, I'm at a stage now where I'm really happy and in my mm-hmm. life, and I think that translated into how I approach my work. And mm-hmm. and so I go into the room, you know, not putting this pressure on myself to have to impress anybody, but to really focus on what the story is that I need to tell today. And it seems to be helping. But it's feast or famine as an actor. You know, you go through these little waves where you're on a real high and you're getting a whole bunch of work. And then all of a sudden it's 3 months. I haven't booked anything. Oh, my gosh. Ah. And then you book something again. Yeah. But I've been probably about a 2.5 year run now of, you know, consistently getting some jobs. So
that was like a weird little clap for those people listening. I'm like, that wasn't really loud. Yeah. I just did a gesture and I'm like, there's no noise.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, all of a sudden, I think back to when I was going to quit, and now all of a sudden I've got, you know, over almost 90 credits on IMDb, and you're like,
just a few.
That's a few. I'm like, hey, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I've done all right. Mom will be proud of that.
What does your mom think of
me? Well, my mom didn't want me to be an actor.
Oh.
You know, I was a valedictorian, and I was a student council president, so I was a bit of a talker. And so she was like, you know, I think, you know, you should be a lawyer. That was her whole thing. And I'm like, I have no desire to be a lawyer. I'm sorry.
That's a lot of work to be a lawyer, yeah, too. Yeah. Different kind of work.
Different kind of work. And so I was going to be a teacher. So I went to – I did to college, 2 years at college to be a teacher and then moved from the small town I was in to mm-hmm. Vancouver to try out big city life and fell into a singing project of all things. Mm. And I'm not really a singer, but it was a boy band project. And so I did some mall shows and and so forth. And I was in that for 2 years. And it was through that that I got asked to go to a commercial audition one day. And booked the commercial. And I went, this is fantastic. How do I do more of this? And so I was about early 20s that happened. It just lit a spark that I guess had been hidden deep inside of me. And I didn't set out to do this, but I absolutely love it. It's my life and love being immersed in it.
Do you have a little bit of an I told you so to your mom now?
Well, the very first time I was on TV, right?
That just, you're like pointing at the TV like, yeah. Ha!
There you
look,
go.
Mom.
But no, it wasn't me. It was like her going, oh, look, my son's on TV. You know, and now she's championing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks,
exactly.
Mom. You said I shouldn't have done this, so.
Yeah. Ha!
Yeah. But that's cute, though. It's adorable to have, you know, like your parents and be proud. And
absolutely.
They must be so proud. It's like, aw.
Yeah, it's my sisters. My mom, you know, she's happy, but my sisters are just over the moon. They think it's hilarious, so.
They'll go and watch the film when it comes out.
Oh, yes.
They'll be like, that's my brother.
That's my brother.
That's my brother. Nice.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to add? We're pretty much at our end of our time, actually.
I don't know. This has been really fun. This is part of when you do. I would be, if I'm being honest, you know, this is not a movie where people are going to go and go, you know, Dan Bacon, you know, it's a movie about the BFG and Sophie. But, you know, being part of a film like this, it allows the opportunity to experience stuff like this, which has been, so this has been really, really, really neat. And to see this side of things, you know.
Sure.
You slave away in those acting classes till, you know, 2 a.m, that, you know, this is a nice treat to be able to experience this and enjoy this.
Oh, of course. Congratulations on it. And
thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. Again, where can people find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter at TheDanielBacon. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's at DanielJBacon.
And it's July 1st, yes, for American premiere?
July 1st.
July 1st. Go watch BFG in theaters for America. And then England, you have to wait just a little bit longer.
A little bit longer.
And then the rest of the world, check your local listings pretty much.
But I think people will like it. It's a beautiful film. Mm-hmm. I was really taken back by how beautiful it looks. So.
Well, just from seeing the trailers, I can say it also. I was like, yeah, just gorgeous, the cinematography of it, and just the look like, and the feel of it.
The feel of it is like, really great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it myself, and you guys should be looking forward to it as well. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Daniel.
Thank you so much.
It was very fun, and then it was fun here. Thank you so much for sharing such excellent perspective on the actor's journey and the creative artist's journey, because so many people, too, they embark on it, and they kind of, there gets that moment where you're like, ah, but then it's so nice to hear success stories of people. You stick in it, and that's just that last little bit that you need to stay there.
Stay there.
And then something happens.
Yep.
Cool.
Yes.
Great. Well, guys, thank you so much for watching, listening. The Popcorn Talk, I Talk Movies. We talked with Daniel Bacon, which, we were talking before, if it's an interesting last name.
Yes.
People call him Bacon.
Bacon.
Well, it's not a bad one. I mean,
everyone calls me Kevin.
Who doesn't love bacon?
People, when I meet them, they go, hey, Kevin. I'm like, I'm not Kevin.
No, not the 6 degrees.
Not the 6 degrees.
Yes. Yeah. Make sure to like, subscribe, thumbs up on YouTube, and then if you want to continue the conversation with Daniel about the film, more than welcome to tweet at him on Twitter, and then yes, also on Instagram as well. Just from my personal cyber stalking, it was a lot more on the Instagram that went over to Twitter, but he's still on Twitter,
yes.
Just so you guys know.
And my social media is going to be improved through this process, I hope, I promise.
It's a learning process.
It is.
You're doing great. All right. You got to stick in it.
Stick in it.
Stay there. You're almost there.
Don't give up, ever.
Yeah, don't give up. My name's Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's KARIDLANE. And again, thank you so much for watching. Make sure to like, subscribe, and follow Popcorn Talk, After Buzz, because we cover a lot of really cool programming and do amazing interviews like this. Again, thank you so much for watching, and thank you, Daniel, for coming in.
Thank you for having
me. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure.
And we'll see you guys later.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.